This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hello, my name is Noreen Y. Houston with stories from Guidepost Magazine, Inspiration for Life. I'll be reading today from the story that I was reading a few weeks ago, actually, Deliverance Alley, and I will continue that story. So let's start. To this day, I am haunted by the time a little girl, just a wisp of a thing, came to the door of a crack house. I ran. "Is my mommy here?" she asked. "We're hungry," and she took our food stamps. The woman had tried to sell the food stamps for drug money. "Go take care of your kids," I screamed at her, surprised by my rage. But I went right back to selling drugs. It was as if I had lost my soul. Eventually, I left that bad boyfriend behind, but not the drug trade. I discovered I was pregnant with my boyfriend's child. I vowed to go straight, but was soon back selling drugs to support myself. Arrested for drug possession, I was forced to ask my parents to take temporary custody of my son. They went ballistic at first, but I was their daughter, and they did what they could do to support me and my child. I begged God so many times to help me get sober. But my contrarian spirit was too strong. Deep inside, I refused to give my life to God the way I had given my life to drugs and addiction. That's when I wound up at Deliverance Alley. I was homeless, just released from another stint behind bars, and ready to forget my troubles by getting righteously high. Night was falling, and I figured I was out of last chances. It was 2007. Deliverance Alley was a popular spot for addicts. There was an old sofa on the grass and a bucket for a bathroom. A bunch of my drug-using friends were there, and they welcomed me back. I sat on the couch, prepped my crack pipe, raised it to my lips. Out of nowhere, a voice spoke in my mind. "Say goodbye to this, Rhonda. To all of this." I jumped up. Looked around. Was someone playing a trick on me? The voice spoke again, same words, even louder and clearer. I freaked out. I ran across the street. I looked back at the vacant lot, and I didn't recognize it, as if I'd been transported to another place. Soon, some kind of powerful presence seemed to come down and root my feet to the sidewalk. I heard people speaking, "Queen, you all right?" That was my street name. Everything seemed far away. I took the drugs out of my pocket and handed them to someone. It was as if I had let go of something more than just the drugs. I felt a warmth enfold me. I broke down weeping. The presence fed my feet and directed my steps to a place called Dallas International Street Church. They run a one-year residential discipleship program that includes counseling and addiction recovery. I laid down my contrarian spirit, admitted I was powerless, and surrendered myself to that life-giving program. To this day, I can't explain how it all happened, only that I felt as if my soul had been freed. Fast forward 17 years, I am sober, married, and the founder of an organization called Making It Count, Incorporated, which offers housing and street support services to people like I once was, lost, homeless, and wondering if there's any hope left for them. I help them to see there is. I reconciled with my child and my parents before my dad died in 2015. I made amends for the ways I had hurt them, including that mean letter I sent him in Vietnam. I came to accept that for a man like him, strict discipline was the way he best knew to show love. I forgave him for that. I am also grateful to him. I believe it was the military discipline he'd instilled in me that enabled me to form the daily responsibilities that helped me stick with recovery. God guided me, but I had to do the work. I run Making It Count Incorporated the same way. Guests in my sober living house do chores, keep their room spotless, and stick to a schedule. As an active addict, the only structure in your life is getting the next fix. Recovering addicts need new structures. Being contrarian and questioning the status quo are necessary sometimes. Addiction recovery is not one of those times. My guests sometimes chafe at my my discipline. In the long run, they are grateful just as I am. In recovery, surrender equals freedom. Since Making It Count Incorporated was founded in 2010, we have distributed more than 100,000 meals, 75,000 hygiene kits, and 12,500 coats to people who need them. We partner with churches and other regional service providers. Every Wednesday, we launder people's clothes for free. We have been recognized by numerous Dallas civic organizations, and I recently received the Community Service Award from the Greater North Dallas Business and Professional Women's Club. I give all the credit to God and my tireless volunteers. Making It Count Incorporated is now in the process of designing and getting permits for our new headquarters. I envision a full-service resource center for homeless people struggling with substance abuse, a place of love, acceptance, and pathways to recovery. I'm sometimes asked if it is possible to get sober without bringing God into your life. I suppose it might be, but that hasn't been my experience. It was God who spoke to me that day at Deliverance Alley and moved my feet and soul in the right direction. There is no other explanation. Guess where I plan to locate that headquarters? That's right, Deliverance Alley. My husband and I recently bought that vacant lot. We do street ministry there now. I can't wait until the building goes up and we can begin offering deliverance on a major scale. Like I said, there is always hope. There is always another chance. That's God's promise, and God always delivers on his promise. My next article will be What Prayer Can Do, Power in Our Day-to-Day Lives. Loose tongues. Tongue-tied had never been anything but an expression to me. Then came the day my one-month-old granddaughter got the diagnosis. The medical name, forgive me if I cannot pronounce this correctly, anglicoliacia, her father. My son Lance explained after a doctor's appointment. He'd attended with his wife Julia. It's when the frenulum of the tongue is extra thick, it's extra short or thick. It theaters the bottom of the tongue tip to the floor of the mouth. That's why Julia's having trouble feeding her. Lance added that Eva would have speech difficulties if it wasn't taken care of. Anglicoliacia and frenulia are beyond my experience. I just wanted to know the baby's condition, if it could be treated. Surgery, Lance said. A phrenotomy, the doctor can do it in his office with the baby on Julia's lap. The procedure sounded simple enough, but the idea of a scalpel or a pair of surgical scissors going anywhere near little Ava's mouth was too horrible to imagine. The morning of the procedure, I sat down for my daily prayer and meditation. Today, of course, I was focused Today, of course, I will be focusing on Eva and her surgery. The doctor knows what he's doing, I told myself, as I reach for one of my collections of meditations. It's a straightforward procedure. Her mother will be right there. It will be over quickly. Eva will barely be aware of what's happened. The truth was, I probably needed more comfort than my granddaughter did. I pulled a thick book off the shelf and opened to a random page. It was the story of Mary's visit to her cousin Elizabeth. Elizabeth's husband, Zachariah, had been struck mute because he didn't believe that his wife, at an advanced age, was going to have a child. Only after Elizabeth gave birth did Zachariah name his newborn son, writing John on a tablet. And at once, I read the mouth was opened and his tongue loosed. His tongue loosened? That's when I knew Eva would be loosened too. Eva is now a chatty 3-year-old, and her grandmother, like Zachariah, knows there's no limit to what God can do. My next article, Animals and Healing. I called him Eddie Cream Cheese, by Crystal Braden, Aurora, Colorado. He was never the dog I would have chosen, but he chose me. My little Chihuahua Paco was one of a kind. He and I had been through a lot together. I thought of him as my soul dog, a gift from God. He'd come with me to Colorado when I moved in with my son to help with his twin daughters, Piper and Mia. Paco was sweet, affectionate, and perfectly behaved, particularly with the girls, who were 6 at the time. Then, after 5 years in Colorado, my beloved Paco was sick. He got sick. The vet did a series of tests. It's best for Paco to let him go, he told me. I had Paco put to sleep, yet my feelings did not die with him. I wandered around the apartment with my collar in my hand. There was his empty bed in the corner. There was his stuffed fox, his favorite toy. There was the spot on the couch where he used to snuggle. I told myself that Paco was no longer in pain, that he was playing on the other side of the Rainbow Bridge, chasing butterflies and squirrels until we could be reunited. It didn't help. Lord, I'm so lost without Paco. No more dogs, I said, scooting Paco's bed under my own so I wouldn't have to see it. I couldn't bear the kind of loss. A week after Paco died, my granddaughters talked me into going to the shelter to look for a new pet. A kitten, I reminded them. Our cat might like the company. And 2 cats would meet our building's 2-pet limit, so I wouldn't have to entertain any thoughts of getting a new dog. We don't have kittens available right now, the lady at the desk told us. The girl sighed. I guess we have to go home, Mia said. We can come back again, right? Piper asked. When they have more. Absolutely, I said. I steered them towards the exit, past a row of enclosures with glass doors. Click, click, click. We turned to the enclosure where the noise was coming from and saw a big black pug. He wasn't young. His muzzle was already turning gray. He was obese, but that didn't stop him from dancing on his hind legs, his toenails tapping the glass. As he headed for the exit, he followed us, waddling sideways. I can only imagine what he looks like. When he could no longer keep up with us, he let out a little squeal. Pick me, he seemed to be saying. Pick me. Can we take him home, the girls pleaded. Please. The pug wagged his stubbly tail, a goofy, hopeful grin on his face. We decided on a kitten, I said. At least I did. I had. But he's perfect, Mia said. Mia and I will walk him and feed him and give him everything he needs, Piper said. I still didn't want a dog, especially not this old, overweight pug. But I couldn't deny the girls. I guess I don't mind having him in the apartment, I said. But remember, he's your dog. I'm not going to take care of him. You are. We will, the twins promised. The shelter didn't know anything about the pug's past. They estimated he was about 8 years old. He didn't even have a name. The twins named him Edgar. Eddie for short. The girls were thrilled when we got home with their new pet, but not as thrilled as Eddie was. He got the zoomies, dashing around the apartment as if to say, I'm home, I'm home. Even I couldn't help smiling. But I had no intention of getting attached. Eddie had other ideas. Every time I turned around, he was at my side. He made his presence known in other less pleasant ways, too. He had accidents leaving puddles and poo around the apartment. He drooled all over the place. One evening, I came into the kitchen and found he'd gotten into the trash and strewn it across the kitchen floor. He's no Paco, I thought, bending down to the floor to clean up the mess. I deposited the last of the trash back into the can. I thought you girls were going to be responsible for Eddie, I said as I reached for a paper towel to wipe up another of his puddles. He's too stinky, said Mia, wrinkling her nose. You should have known this would happen, I thought, spraying cleaner on the floor. The girls had the best of intentions to take care of Eddie, but they were only 11, not old enough for that kind of responsibility. I don't want a dog, I told Eddie, right to his face. He grinned as if to say, of course you do. I'm your dog. No, my heart belonged only to Paco. I'll take care of this dog, Lord, but I won't love him. Eddie didn't mind that I didn't return his love. He seemed happy just to be with me. He even listened patiently when I told him about Paco. In fact, he was drawn to his predecessor's things. When he came upon Paco's stuffed fox, he grabbed it in his mouth like it was the most amazing thing ever and twirled it around the room with it, squirreling and drooling. Later, I found him snuggled up in Paco's bed that I'd hidden away. One evening, I was sitting in front of the TV, not really paying attention to the show that was on. I missed Paco so much. I held his collar in my hand for comfort. Eddie, as usual, was right beside me. This was Paco's collar, I said. Eddie lowered his muzzle to sniff the collar. Then he bumped it with his head. He buried his flat face into it, as if trying to put it on himself. I'm your dog, he seemed to be saying again. You're my human. Don't you get it? Eddie was so grateful for every little joy in his life. Was I being foolish by not following his example? You deserve more than just being taken care of, I said, stroking his head and feeling so many feelings break loose inside me, feelings I hadn't wanted to let go of for a dog. I didn't want to let go of. You deserve to be loved too. After that, I stopped trying to guard my heart. Soon, it was hard for me to imagine watching TV or even just sitting on the couch without Eddie snuggling close, his little front leg draped over mine, as if to confirm that we belonged together. I grew to love his face, so unlike Paco, with his flat muzzle and downturned mouth. He looked like a gangster in an old movie. A sweet little gangster I nicknamed Eddie Cream Cheese. I had Eddie for 8 years before he too got sick. Once again, the vet told me I had to let my dog go. The vet came over to the apartment so Eddie could spend his final hours at home. As ever, he was grateful for every minute he had. I knew how he felt. My dogs and I weren't meant to be together on earth forever, but I would cherish the time God gave us. Never again would I push away love because I was afraid of loss. Eddie had taught me love was fearless and asked nothing in return. I stroked his grizzled head one last time and whispered, "I love you, Eddie Cream Cheese. Thank you for choosing me." My next article, from the Facebook fans, Messages from Above, by Diane Murkow. My grandson pitches for his high school baseball team. When they made the playoffs, I was so excited to watch him play. The day of the big game, I arrived to find the baseball field empty. A passerby informed me the game had been moved at the last minute to St. Clair High School, miles away. If I hurried, I could make it. I started driving and realized I didn't know where I was going, so I pulled over and looked up St. Clair on my GPS. There were no direct routes, just a series of unfamiliar back roads. I was sure to get turned around. My heart sank. It was the first time I was going to miss an important game. Lord, now what? Just then, a school bus whizzed past. The words on the back were easy to make out. St. Clair. I followed that bus all the way to the school and arrived in time for the second inning. Reverend William Taylor. My wife and I had driven down from Washington State to Portland, Oregon, to visit her sister. We passed a church a few blocks from her sister's home. Something about the little brick building just spoke to me. If I were ever going to pastor a church, that would be it, I told my wife. We both laughed. I don't know what prompted me to say that. I worked as the assistant pastor to a pastor, but had never considered becoming a pastor myself. I forgot about the comment until 4 years later, when I was looking for a new job. I got a phone call from a church offering me a pastoral position. I looked up the address. I couldn't believe it. It was the Little Brick Church in Portland. I worked there for the next 30 years before retiring. God had the perfect job in mind for me long before I found it. Beth Gormong. It was still dark out when I took out my beagle, Max, for his morning walk. Things had been tough recently. My husband's income had gone down. I was trying to bring in some extra money with my writing. I'd submitted several stories, but I hadn't heard anything back yet. It was hard to stay optimistic. Up ahead, something caught my eye. "Lord, do I see what I think I see?" I said out loud. "Is that even scientifically possible?" Cutting across the black pre-dawn sky was a magnificent rainbow. Remarkably, it remained as the sun rose, lighting up the sky for the rest of our walk. A miraculous reminder to keep looking up, even when I feel down. The next article, Faith and Living. Thrive Again, Four Lessons from a Women's Retreat Leader and Harried Mom, by Claire McGarry, Windham, New Hampshire. Once when my children were 8, 6, and 2, I didn't have just a bad mothering day. I had a bad mothering week. I yelled at my kids, they misbehaved more, and my frustration level hit the roof. On Saturday, my husband told me, "I'll take care of the kids, you go take care of yourself." I grabbed my car keys and journal, and then dashed for the door. I ended up at the outdoor chapel of a retreat center. I gazed at a cross with the backdrop of a lake beyond and cried and prayed and journaled for 3 solid hours. I walked to my car with a new lightness in my step, and it struck me that I couldn't wait to return to the life I had run away from. I couldn't wait to get home and be the best mother possible to my 3 children. That inspired me to hold retreats for mothers and caregivers centered around prayer and reconnecting with God. Here are some of the practices that women told me helped them the most. Then he climbed into the boat with them, and the wind died down. Mark 6:51, NIV. Pray a word or two. Since I frequently felt overwhelmed, I needed a word or phrase I could easily focus on each day. I asked God to give me an idea that was actionable, something I could do daily that would make me more faith-filled. When I heard with grace, I knew it was exactly what I needed. I started every task whispering with grace in my heart. I fed and dressed my children with grace. I washed dishes and did laundry with grace. I greeted the cashier at the grocery with grace. This short prayer transformed the most mundane task into a blessing. Still, I couldn't imagine it helping on a day when everything went wrong. Oh, how I had underestimated God. Adding with grace invited God into the storms of my day and diffused each situation. When I corrected my kids with grace, they understood better how they needed to change their behavior. When I spoke to the cable customer service rep with grace, she adjusted my bill and even gave us a better rate for my troubles. When I apologized to my friend with grace, she forgave my mistakes and seemed to appreciate me more. A heartfelt word or two prayed by a busy mom or caregiver can be worth 1,000 words in the ears of God. He hears them clearly and responds often in a way that surprises us. That concludes my reading of Guidepost Magazine for today. This is Noreen Y. Houston, recording from Radio Reading Services of Cincinnati Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired. Thank you, and have a great day. Until next time.